Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to Jokes with Mark Simmons, the podcast where I chat to another comedian about jokes they can't get to work. As always, I'm joined in the virtual studio by producer Joel Grove.
Hey, hello Mark. And hello you, the listener.
Hello the listener, the most important person in this equation.
Mm.
Do you reckon?
100%.
Yeah, I think so. So, Joel. We've had a bit of a. This has taken a little while to record this intro because I've had a few issues. I'll be honest. I'll put my hands up. I forgot that we were doing it.
You forgot, and then your laptop was dead, and then you couldn't find any headphones, and it's taken you half an hour to reach this point.
26
half
minutes.
An hour.
Well, but we're here now, and that's the important thing.
It is. It's great.
And do you want to know what I was doing when you messaged me and reminded me?
What were you doing, Mark? Do I want to know?
I was doing something repeatedly. Well, have a guess. A little game show. What do you think it was? What do you think I was doing over and over and over and over again?
Were you brushing your hair?
No, you can tell that's not true.
Were you eating blueberries?
No.
Were you eating strawberries?
Had blueberries this morning in my shake. No fruit involved.
Were you doing push-ups?
No.
Were you...
But thanks, mate.
Washing your feet? Were you clipping your toenails?
How can you wash your feet over and over and over again? You can.
Toe by toe?
What's the point?
Do you wash your feet?
Yes, of course I wash my feet.
It's a big debate on the internet, that, isn't it?
Is it a big debate?
Yeah, it is. It's like a big internet topic whether people actually wash their legs in the shower or not.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'll be honest, it's probably not as thorough as the other bits.
Yeah, this is it, you see.
But they do get soap on them.
They do. But
yeah, and a bit of rubbish.
Oh, that's okay. Speaking of which, what were you doing earlier? Repeat.
I was watching the brand spanking new Cobra Kai trailer for season 3, and it's epic. It's 2 minutes and 20 seconds, and there's so much going on. I had to keep going back and watching it and watching it.
Is everyone Kung Fu fighting?
Well, 2.5 minutes fast as lightning, mate, that went. But I watched it over and over again, so it took ages, and I forgot about the podcast.
Oh, my God.
I'm excited though, and
tell.
It's only a month to go until it airs on Netflix. Good stuff. We're not even sponsored by them, but I'm plugging the shit out of it. I love it. Anyway, some people don't know anything about Cobra Kai, so they don't want to hear about that. Are you all right, Joel?
I'm grand. I'm all good, Mark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What have you been up to today? Anything?
What have I been up to? Just doing my regular job. You know.
Podcasting,
yeah. And then what I like to do when I wind down in the evening is record some more podcasts with you.
Yeah,
I clock off. I step away from my laptop and then I step back to my laptop in a different outfit. And I think, oh,
but it's more fun with me. Surely,
I'm gonna wind down. Oh, couldn't possibly say. Professionally, I couldn't say.
Yeah, but unprofessionally.
Oh, everything else is shit.
And speaking of unprofessionally, this podcast. So I've had good. I met up with a friend of the show, future guest, already recorded, El Baldinho.
I love El Baldinho. El Baldinho, drove me to my worst ever gig in my brief stint.
Oh, this is exciting. This is exactly what I was going to talk to you about.
Oh, really?
Because he told me about it.
It was horrible.
But he would not tell me what happened. All he said was, this is okay, so everybody, Joel Grove is a comedian. he used to be a professional comedian, like I tell everyone. He used to be a comedy in Kent, didn't you, Joel? Anyway, so I was talking to El Baldino, and he said that you were in the car with him going to the gig, and you were debating whether to do a thing. And then you got to the gig, but he wouldn't tell me whether you did it or didn't do it. He didn't tell me anything, really. But he said, is that the gig you're talking about?
Yeah, yeah. It's not like, yeah, El Baldino hasn't driven me to lots of gigs.
I thought you were hanging out all the time.
So it was so far away, the gig. It was like in like Carlisle or somewhere like stupidly north. So it was a really long car journey. And I feel bad, but I can't remember. There was another comedian in the car as well.
From Kent?
From Kent.
Oh, crikey.
And I'd only really done about 10 gigs, and they'd all been in Kent and one in London at that point. And I don't know how I was involved in doing this gig. Anyway, got a lift up there. And all I can remember from the lift is I was sat in the back of the car, and El Baldino and this other guy were being really funny. And I thought, oh, no. This is like a proper comedy that we're going to go and do. And we got there, and it was like a theatre gig. And again, you know, I'd not done anything like that, like a little theatre. And it was really busy. And I wasn't very good. And I came out and I had to do 10 minutes. Honestly, thinking about it makes me feel absolutely horrendous.
Is it really bad, was it?
Well, yeah, but I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't really have any sort of jokes
or
material.
Gigs up north can be tough. If you're from down south.
Yeah, especially when you're on the bill with El Baldino, who absolutely smashes it.
Did he? Oh,
yeah,
great.
Yeah, he absolutely smashed it. And you know what these gigs are like. I was like the 10-minute invitational, open mic slot. And I think I was on just after El Baldino, who'd completely ripped it. And that audience could have watched El Baldino for like 7 hours. But they had to be stopped from watching Northern brilliant comedian El Baldino to meet Joel Grove, 10 gigs into his comedy career.
Producer Joel.
Anyway, so I did a really bad 10 minutes. And then at the end of the 10 minutes, this bloke, like proper in a flat cap, sat in the front row of this theatre.
Was that El Baldino?
It was El Baldino, yeah. It was quite mean of him to do this. He just shouted, are you going to tell us a joke? After like 9 minutes and 55 seconds of me talking. And then I just had like a breakdown. And there was a big confetti cannon by the side of the stage from like...
Was this something you took?
No, it was like from a production that had been there or something. Oh. And I just went and grabbed it, and I was like, well, that's me done, everyone. Thanks so much. This was great. And like, I had just done to silence for 10 minutes. and I went, and this is the big finale. Everyone count down, 10. And just no one joined in. And I just did the whole 10 to 1 on stage on my own. And then blew this confetti cannon and walked off. On the way back, I decided I would never ever do stand up again.
Did you stop there?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
No way! I didn't know this story.
It was horrible. It was so horrible.
Oh my god! But I'm sure he'd said to me, he gave me the impression you took this confetti cannon with you.
No, I think he's talking about. I'd planned to make some quite ill-advised jokes about the Yorkshire Ripper, which I think I did make, and I don't think went well.
Ah, brilliant, good stuff, good solid content. That we have gone. This is probably a record for the longest intro we've done.
There we go.
But I liked it all. So good stuff.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it.
And that's El Baldino is an episode we've got to look forward to in the coming weeks. So let's crack on. Who have we got this week?
We've got the amazing Ken Cheng.
Ken Cheng! Here we go. So how's things been, mate? Are you what are you up to while all this is happening?
Oh, so I'm playing poker. I think I mentioned in the last podcast we did.
Yeah. Have you got any poker jokes? Like, is that something you do jokes about? Because it's interesting because my other thing is taekwondo. Like, that's something I've done my whole life. And I've never written jokes about it, which is weird because you'd think that'd be something that you would write about. But that's kind of the only thing in my life I take seriously. So it's like,
yeah.
The only one Taekwondo joke I loosely wrote, which never worked, which maybe because you sort of got to know it, is I didn't want to go to something like, I didn't want to go to Taekwondo when I was a kid, but my dad dragged me there kicking and screaming, so I fit right in. So I think there's something in that, but I don't know if, because in Taekwondo, you literally scream when you're kicking, like it's
I don't know that element.
Yeah, I mean, so
you can,
people,
you can get the kicking part, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe that's 2 foot. Yeah, so I think just kicking on its own isn't enough. That's like a bit simple, but kicking and screaming, if they made sense. But yeah, that's too niche.
That's the problem with poker as well. A lot of there's like different levels of what people know about poker. So I've done a bit of material about poker, but I can't go fully into it. I felt, because I don't know what people know about it.
So, right. So, yes, that's what I mean. I don't know anything about poker. I know the basics, but there's a lot more you could do with it.
Yeah, because I can tell my story, I guess, because I started playing poker like when I was 18 and I dropped out of uni to do it.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Oh, that's cool. That is a good story. Yeah.
But so, yeah, I talk about that a bit in some of my shows, but... It's hard to go really into what's funny about, like, the things you observe on it, or without having to explain your whole life and the whole community and stuff.
I guess that's something you'd have to dedicate an entire show to and advertise it as that, and hope that there's enough people in Edinburgh that are really into poker.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. That kind of thing. Because I talk about, like, I compare it to how it's not like a Casino Royale. That's a bit I've done.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so that's something people can relate to.
Glamour, yeah, because that's what people, I think that's people's first instinct is like, oh, it's like James Bond. Yeah. It's like, no, I'm not.
Is it like chess? Like, because my brother used to go to a chess club and it wasn't glamorous at all. And I've just literally watched that there's Queen's Gambit. Netflix.
I watched it.
And they made a similar sort of observation in that about, you'd expect it to have been a lot more glamorous than it actually is, being that it's like the best in the world at something.
Yeah.
It's just in an old sports hall.
Showing up.
Yeah. Are there lots of weirdos playing poker?
Yeah, there are a lot of weirdos playing it. But I think it was huge in the 2000s. It was huge, like, when it was on TV all the time. It was on, like, Channel 5 and Channel 4 and Challenge TV and stuff. And then people got really into it for a while. It's died down a bit since then.
Right.
But, like, if you were, like, 18 in 2006 and you were, like, at all, like, smart, you can make millions playing poker online.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All these 18-year-olds who became millionaires. So there are a lot of, like, these, like, immature millionaires walking around, basically. They just got all this money because the money just goes straight into their account, but they don't have the life experience. So they're just, like, rich at 18.
Just got a good poker face and that's it.
Yeah.
Because I wrote a couple of poker jokes that don't ever really work. And I think maybe they're just a bit. So one is, I've had lots of different versions. Like, I'd have to try. I've gradually worked towards a slightly better version, but I can't even remember what that is. But something like, I found out my girlfriend was good at poker firsthand. Or something like that. I found it out firsthand, which I thought, that's quite good.
Yeah. I think it comes too quick for people.
Do you think it's too obvious?
No, I don't think it's... No, I think it's like...
There's no... They haven't done any work with it.
Yeah, I think it's passed. It just passes by you really quickly. It's like, firsthand, okay.
And then, what if it's a conversation? So, like, so I said, I told my mate that I was my girlfriend beat me at poker. No. I told my mate that my girlfriend won a poker match. He said, firsthand. I said, no, one of her friends told me. Does that work?
I'm trying to think if that's the way around it should be.
Or something like that, because that then makes... So then it's me misunderstanding rather than just doing a shit joke.
Could work.
If you found something out first, I found that out for first hand, because that might work if someone goes first hand. No, that doesn't work because you wouldn't win a poker match first hand.
No one would ask that. Yeah, no one would ask that.
Yeah, It's just shit, mate. Just shit.
There's an idea there, but it's hard.
What does work is if there's a poker player in the audience and I've asked him and he says poker, I go, and then do that joke. That will work because they're like, oh, he's just thought of that.
But, yeah, you got to save it. I'll be your stooge in the front row. Yeah. I'll tell that I play poker. And people will be like, hey, I've seen him on the bill. But.
Yeah. And I had another one, which I really liked when I wrote it. Again, never gets a good laugh. Is So I gave up drink. I stopped drinking when I got my job working at the poker table. Well, I can't deal with a hangover. I can't deal with a hangover.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
That is pretty much the response audiences give me. Yeah. Going, okay. Oh, yeah. 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 We understand what that is.
Yeah.
That's all I got. That's all my poker jokes.
Good. I mean, I don't have any like puns on poker, really.
No.
No. No, I don't think so. I think it's all just because it's all a lot more like storytelling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you won the joke of the fringe.
Yeah.
Did you have trouble with that? Because you're not a one-linery sort of comedian.
Yeah. So the audience was more weird after that.
Yeah, because you hear loads of different stories about different situations that then cause weird audiences. Like if someone gets nominated for the Edinburgh Award.
Yeah.
And then everybody comes. Yep. But it's not necessarily people that are going to get it. So then they really struggle in those most important gigs after that. But I guess that's a similar sort of thing. So you had people expecting one-liners, did you? And then...
Yeah. And also they just don't know what to expect either. They just don't... they could be anyone. And I think that year, that was my first year, and I spent the whole year like building up like people who were kind of into the show. And then suddenly Joke of a Fringe hits and they were all... this is a completely different age, completely different vibe.
Yeah. So it's one of those, that's hard, isn't it? Because you're like, oh my God, I've got a full audience. This is great.
Yeah.
And then,
I saw that in the last few days. It's like, oh, okay. These are the hardest gigs of the entire. Yeah.
I had that once when Sam Simmons won the award. I ended up getting a few people coming to see me because they assumed. Yeah. So they were a bit weird because they're expecting some kind of surreal Australian. Yeah, it was odd. So do you have many one-liners in your show? Was that just like a coincidence that you just had a couple
six
in
that show?
Oh, did
I had,
you
like six at the start, and it was kind of like,
oh, so you did it as a bit.
I did slightly meta with a PowerPoint being like, here's this section is just some jokes, and then I actually the one that won, I never got a laugh anyway.
That always happens, man.
Yeah, no, but even before it was in the show for me to tell, and then I would pull up a PowerPoint of it as a Facebook status and go like, wow, that one got like 90 likes on Facebook, so okay, you're wrong. Cool. That was the only reason that joke was in the show.
but then the fact that worked on Facebook or Twitter or whatever, that's why it worked so well.
It's good
in the competition because people...
Yeah, because it's all written.
Because I've got jokes now in for my next show that did purely really well on Twitter. What's that?
Are they purely for the competition?
Yeah, just that's all. That's my entire act. I just want to win that goddamn competition.
Well, how did you come like second or third or something?
The year you won, I was sixth.
Like fifth or something, right?
Or I think sixth. Yeah,
and
again, that was a joke that doesn't work that well live because it's a bit weird. That's Combine Harvesters, and you have a really big restaurant. But written down, people really like it.
Yeah,
and then I was on it last. I was on it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was on it last year, which was To Be or Not to Be a Horse Rider. That is Equestrian.
Nothing.
And again, it's a good. I like it, but never gets a big laugh. Which is, you know, and I've got some this year in my that, like I say that like one of them is I was embarrassed about doing pole vault at school, but you know what? They gave me stick and I got over it.
Nice.
So, yeah. So it's written down. Nice. That worked really well on Twitter. I think that's a good sort of joke, but it's never a big hitter.
No.
Because it's just, like I say, it's just, I don't know, it gets a mixed reaction. If it's an audience that really like one-liners, they go for it. Yeah. If not, it doesn't really surprise them. It's one of those. Because it's like that one I said earlier. You are sort of spelling it out at the end. It's not like they have to do any work to get it.
Yeah. Is your show mostly one-liners then?
It's all one-liners,
It's all one-liners, yeah.
I mean, I have some bits to break it up a bit. But
And how many shows have you done in Edinburgh?
Five solos and one double act.
Who's double act with?
Sean Walsh.
Oh, yeah, because you do the radio thing with him.
Yeah, so we were on tour and then we started writing sort of double acty bits and we're like, we might as well just do this. So we did a free fringe show and it was a year that I didn't have a solo show. So it was sort of like a fun year.
Two in 1 year. Person.
Yeah. And what happened is the next year, my show was one of the best I've done because I'd had 2 years to do it.
Oh, yeah, that's good, yeah.
Because with one-liners, you just need more jokes to choose from and then the show will be better. It's just science, isn't it? It's just maths. So hopefully next year, I've got no excuse. It should be a really, really good show.
Are you going back next year?
Well, are we? Or are we going to have to wait another year?
Are we? Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not going to go back, I think I've decided, because I just can't be asked to... Because you basically have to decide soon and you don't know what the festival is now. There's no...
No, and I don't
no
even
idea
know.
What it would look like, how many people will be there.
Are the main... Because I go free fringe and I know they've just opened applications, which that's just reminded me, to be honest. I think I will apply.
Yeah.
But are the main venues... going to be doing it now the vaccine? I would think they'd be more confident now there's going to be a vaccine.
I think the vaccine will probably push it over to probably it will happen,
but you think you still have a year off?
I think probably. I just can't be asked to. I'm not really in the mindset to preview. That's the issue. I haven't done any.
It's like you
anything.
Want to do normal gigs first before you start previewing.
Yeah, I haven't done anything for a year. I've done like 3 gigs in lockdown.
Oh, did you not do much?
No, not that many gigs. I did a couple and then I didn't do that much online stuff either. So
no.
I did write some new stuff. Yeah, but I wrote like 10 minutes of new stuff in this time. But I'm not building towards a show mentally. No. So I haven't really... I took a year off. I was going to take a year off this year anyway. Okay. But I haven't used it at all. So I might as well just take another one off.
Yeah. And like I say, then the show will be even better the following year.
Yeah.
And it'll probably be back to normal. It's going to be a weird one next year because... Are people going to be traveling up?
Yeah, I'm wondering about audience.
Yeah, I don't know. I want to do it because I just, you know, it's just a habit now.
You've done it every year then?
Yeah.
You've done a show every year. Man, that's, yeah.
Yeah, I try to, which is unusual for a one-liner comic. I think it's normally 2-3 years people sort of take. But I've got a nice venue on the Free Fringe. And
which one?
Banshee Labyrinth.
Oh, yeah.
And I started to build an audience and I just think if I take a year off and also it gets me writing.
Yeah. That's the main reason I do it over and over. I didn't feel like I needed to do it last year, but I just wanted to turn over an hour of material to have, and it just makes you way better. So
yeah. Cause I found that after my first year, so I wrote a show to go back the next year. And even though it didn't get any like particular buzz or anything.
Yeah.
When I came away from the second show, my 20-minute set was so much better.
Yeah.
Because I'd got 2 hours of stuff to choose from.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was my mindset. I never got depressed about the Edinburgh thing because hardly anyone really gets a big buzz up there.
Yeah, there's like a couple newcomers and a couple other people. And even then, the buzz like disappears like come November. Yeah,
exactly. It's no one cares. So my motivation is just to make my stuff better, just make me better as a comic. And that way you don't get all depressed when it doesn't quite go your way and stuff like that. So yes, that's how I've kept myself sane with Edinburgh.
Yeah, I think you have to have a strategy for that. Otherwise you will just go, unless you're the one person who everyone talks about.
Yeah, because I've seen so many people after a couple of shows start drinking loads because they're so depressed that it's not going well. And I'm like, yeah, but that's not going to... It's not going to get better now. That's not going to make it better. So, yeah.
Have you had a particularly bad Edinburgh out of your...
My first one
First one.
Was a good show. but the wrong venue. Like in my actual room, it was the first year the venue existed, and the room I was in, I was the only stand up in that room. Like before me, there was a play, but it's quite cool actually. It was with Pike from Dad's Army. What's his name?
Right. Yeah.
Oh God, what's his name is, but he's like an old man now. He was in EastEnders or something as well. So I met them. That's not, that was good. That was nice.
What venue was this?
The Mash House.
Oh, the Mash House. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was just badly thought out by me, really. And then I got a couple of reviews, but Chortle came to my show towards the end, and it did, the review was brilliant. Like I couldn't have writ it. Oh my God. I couldn't have writ it better myself. I probably couldn't, if that's how I say writ. So I couldn't have written it better myself, but it came out 4 days after the Fringe. so it was a disaster. Like it was a brilliant review. I was so chuffed with it. But if that had to come out at the beginning, the whole thing could have been a different thing. But I was just hidden away. But I think it's good. I think it's good in the long run. At the time, that was a bit depressing.
Yeah.
But in the long run, it's made me just keep going, working hard. I think if you get it all too early, I think that you know, I don't think that helps you become a better comic.
No, a lot of people have a massive first year and then just disappear.
Yeah. How was yours? Because you got the Dave Joke of the Fringe in your first year. That's great.
I was very lucky because I was having quite a bad time until I got that.
Everyone does. It's so weird.
Yeah, I was not. I didn't have a good first year. I was just not really ready for like just how hard it could get.
Mm.
Because like some days would be great, but not enough of the days.
Yeah.
And some days were just total bombs, and there were like a few stretches where it was four total bombs in a row, and I was like, okay, well, I've misjudged this.
It's a long time for a bomb, isn't it?
Yeah. By the end of the month, you get used to it. You're like, wow, I could just do it. I could do an hour of silence all day.
But what's stupid is sometimes people enjoy it.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's laugh then. What is wrong?
Yeah. It's just not a good setup to actually watch comedy because these people are tourists who come in for like a weekend. They pack in 12 shows. So you're number seven of 12 shows, and they're like running around. They just sit down. They just want to sit down and sleep, really. So it's like in their mind, I've been one of those people who's packed in like five shows a day. It's really, and to do that for like a whole weekend and be like drinking all the time, they just want to sleep.
Yeah. I can't do it because I'm quite tall. I get uncomfortable in the chairs, and then after 20 minutes, I can't enjoy a show.
That was the biggest problem in my venue in my first year. It was the cellar in Pleasance. It doesn't have the backs on the chairs, and it's those little cushiony things. And people, I could see people were like, they just want to go. Like even if the show was amazing, like if the show is amazing for first 35 minutes, the last 20 was always hard because of those chairs, no matter what. So it's like, well, I'll just do a 45 minute show then.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to cut out of 10 because nothing good happens in the last 10 minutes.
I saw Stuart Lee once, and big fan of Stuart Lee, and it was in Edinburgh, and I was so uncomfortable. Yeah. I didn't enjoy it, and it was a great show, but I just couldn't enjoy it. I was really... just couldn't, because none of us chairs have backs, and
it's one of the worst places to watch comedy. It's one of the worst atmospheres for comedy. Really.
I hardly ever really go and see shows because of that reason.
Yeah,
but I think people think I'm a bit boring in that sense because
I think do whatever you can. I'm of the mindset, whatever you need to do to get through Edinburgh, fair enough. If you want to be a hermit, just some people see zero shows and just like stay in all the time, and fair enough. Yeah. It is a job for.
My shows have been better since I stopped drinking and didn't go out anymore.
Yeah, I know quite a few comics just stopped drinking completely, and it's just it just changed. It because you are working every day for a month, and even though it's only an hour a day, it is
what we normally do.
Exactly, it's a lot.
So, have you got any bits and pieces that over the years that you've
I've been trying to look back.
You got notepads, or is it on Google or
Google Docs? I've used Google Docs for everything. There's no one scripts. Yeah,
so it's quite nice because you can search a word. So
yeah.
If you need a joke on something, you can, it's quite easy to search and find.
Yeah, one. Yeah, I was doing that. I'll go back quite a while. I remember I used to try and do this bit where the observation is I really enjoy watching other people kiss. I really enjoy it. Not in a weird way, maybe in a weird way, not in an overly sexual way, but just like what, like on a train, if you see a couple kiss, it's just like there's some for some reason I enjoy that. I couldn't, this bit worked once, I think. It worked the first time I did it ever. And I think it was because the audience were quite on board with who I was, or it was done
in a larger
show where it kind of worked. But then every time I've done it since, I did it in Edinburgh in my first year as well, and it would just, people were just like completely befuddled.
So were you selling it in a way that's like, I'm a bit weird, I like it?
Yeah.
Do you think that maybe you sold that better the first time you did it, in that you were literally just saying it as you meant it rather than it being a bit of material?
Yeah, so maybe. I think it just happened the first time. The audience maybe had a few more like people who knew me in the audience or something. Oh, right. It was probably a preview or something. Or it just was a kind of, or like the people in Edinburgh are just a bit more not really into that kind of thing.
So what is it you like about it? You just think, oh, that's nice.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's kind of live vicariously as well. You can kind of feel the emotion of that kiss. I would talk about doing it in a train behind a couple in front of me and looking through that crack, and that's really, and I'm just like, oh god, I hope they don't see me doing this, because I'm just looking what if they turn to me
right up to it.
Basically.
So did they sort of, were they just more kind of uncomfortable with the bit, do you think, the audience, or were they just like,
I don't think they were overly uncomfortable.
It's just not an observation they could relate to.
Yeah, maybe. I don't think they could. I thought more people would relate to it. I thought more people would be doing it, but I thought more people,
I think people find it uncomfortable watching people kiss.
Maybe
there's an angle there of like, I've heard people complain about people showing public, it's called public displays of affection, isn't it?
I mentioned about PDA, I jump off it, but because I've introduced it that way, everything in that bit would be difficult.
Really? Yeah.
But I did it in Edinburgh quite a few times, trying to change it around, and there were some good gags within it, but they never got on board with the actual initial observation. It's meant to be funny, that I enjoy that.
I found it funny when you told me.
But they just never, they didn't, there was like, what?
That's brilliant. So when you said you changed it around, did you change the observation around different ways?
No, I never really changed the overall thing. I changed maybe how I introduced it, try and tweak it.
I think I'm a bit weird.
I used to do that. I don't think that actually helped, really. I think people were like, oh, this is...
I think they can tell through the observation.
Yeah, I used to try and link it in by saying that. I tried to get across why, what they should be thinking about me, but even then, I think they were just like, what?
Is that something you've brought back over the time as well? Because
if I did bring it back, I could, because I wasn't as good a performer back then, so I probably could sell it just off like just like completely just things that you wouldn't really think about. I probably would be able to sell it differently now.
Yeah, because I find that with a lot of old bits, you just get, you're a better comic now.
I've done that with old bits where this bit used to go badly because I was just worse at comedy, not because the bit was bad.
Oh, that's cool. Have you got any other bits like that that you
I'm trying to think of weird thing. I didn't find that many weird things.
Because that is a thing, isn't it? If you're trying to do observations, and then I think that's why I couldn't do observations, because the things I observe, no one else does.
I think some of that usually works, and some of that just can go completely the other way.
Yeah, I had a bit where I noticed that the U-turn signs are the wrong way round, because it should be an N turn, because you go that way, you don't go a U way. So I observed that, and that would never get anything. And then the only way I could get a laugh out of it is when I went a lowercase n, and then I'd say, because if it was a capital N, I'd act out sort of going, oh, you don't know where the fuck you're going. You're going up, down, and up, and that would get a laugh. But I always felt that it wasn't a good bit, because the first observation didn't work. So it's almost a bit cheap.
Interesting.
Do you know what I mean?
Was unless it worth suppose, it? Unless maybe I it's worth of, it for the capital N is a lot bigger a bit. So
yeah, and it would get a good laugh. But maybe I could. That was in my first show, because I was so desperately clambering for material because I wasn't as prolific as I am now. I was like, oh yeah, that's a thing, and it gets a laugh. Chuck that in, and then I haven't done it since. But maybe if I did a bit about saying I'm terrible at observations, like no one ever actually gets the observation,
because that is the thing. No one else would have observed that. Probably no one else has observed that. No. And for a lot of people, they're like, so what? I still regard it as a U-turn.
Yeah.
Like I accept it. Yeah. That's fine. An N turn.
Yeah, an N turn. It should be. It's weird. Because that's the way you drive, isn't it? You don't go backwards.
Yeah. Maybe people with spatial awareness are not. They can't actually. Maybe they just can't.
Maybe they can't visualize it. Or it's been, you know, they've been taught it so much from young that. Maybe, I don't know.
But maybe everyone comes in from the top in their head.
Yeah. Don't know. But like maybe I could just try and think of some observations that don't really work, and then try and get laughs off the back of them, like that one. Because that would be a nice section to break up the one-liners, because it's still on point, because I'm saying I'm a one-liner comedian, so I can't do observations, and then do that. And I always liked it. I really liked performing the capital N.
It's good,
because I'd never done a McIntyre sort of like act out before. And that's the only one I've ever done. And I really enjoyed doing it just because of that, because normally I'm quite stationary.
I think they're relieved that it's gone somewhere extra, because
so they're awkward.
They're like, he's got something with this.
Yeah. That could be it. That might be the only reason it gets a laugh, actually.
I mean, not the only reason. It's funny.
But yeah, because there's no other I was just trying to think if you could ring any more out of that as a thing.
Yeah.
There's no other letters that you have to follow ever, is there?
Yeah,
like a Q turn
where you go into a roundabout but decide I've gone into this roundabout wrong. A capital Q turn.
Yeah, maybe there's more into that.
Yeah,
maybe
you could probably look through the letters. There's probably a whole extra. Like,
windy roads are sort of S is like an S, isn't it?
Yeah.
But an X. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about. I mean, it's too much to think about now.
Just go through every 26 and every capital version. So
what other bits have you found in your notes?
I used to do a bit about meal deals. I think I used to do about how I used to buy my own. Well, first of all, just in general about how I live off meal deals. I lived off meal deals for like a year.
Tesco's.
Sainsbury's.
Okay.
Sainsbury's meal deals. Just get a sandwich, a snack, a drink, and I would just live off them. And
classic.
What did I say about them? They were like, I would talk about what I call as like the super meal deal, or the real meal deal, where you get like a reduced sandwich, like a reduced six pack of crisps, and it would come less than a meal deal. And there's a lot of stuff like that. But it only really worked because I wrote it in the student scene, so students were really on board with it.
Because you started comedy when you were at uni, right?
Well, I was living in Cambridge. I wasn't a student when I started, but I started in a student scene.
Right.
Yeah, I started in a student scene there, which is an insane place to start. Have you ever done a gig in Cambridge?
Yeah, I've done a few.
Have you done the Wolfson Howler?
No, I did one at the Wine Gums.
Oh, that's Vanessa Ward.
That's it. Yeah, yeah.
She's one of my mum's friends.
Really?
But it's so weird because she was like a kind of learning support assistant or something at my school, primary school. So when I was four, and she was the mum of a guy in my brother's year called Jake or something. And I knew her from the age of like four. And then she just started doing comedy like 5 years ago. She did this course. I was like, what the hell is going on?
Oh, because she does do an act as well, doesn't she?
Does she?
I feel like she might do, but she definitely puts on gigs.
Oh yeah, yeah, no, yeah. She took a course and she does. She hosts them, right?
Yes, she does. Yeah, it's been a while since I've done them. Yeah.
Yeah, no, she does an act as well. So it's so weird. It's like, what the hell is going on?
She's
my mum's friend. This is a family friend.
Do you get booked for that more because you've got an in?
She keeps asking me to do it, but I never do it. I feel quite guilty, but I feel weird about performing comedy in front of someone who knew me when I was four.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird.
Do you find that weird dramatic when people you know come to watch you?
Not friends, but I think family I'm a bit weird about.
Yeah. I used to be like that, and now I don't care at all. I'm just this is my job. It doesn't matter what you think. It's just my job. So with that meal deal bit, that's a good topic because everybody knows about meal deals.
Yeah.
But then maybe not everyone lives off of them other than students. So maybe that's why that used to fly more. I don't know.
Yeah, again, this is something I did my first show. So I've not really brought back. I think I was quite limited as both a performer and a writer. So I'd write in a certain way, which was quite restrictive. I don't know what had to exactly describe why it was restricted, but it just was kind of a limited style. So
in your kind of persona?
Persona, and also just, I think, what I believed jokes should look like, and less conversational as well. There's less emotion behind everything. And
have you tried this bit since you have improved?
I've been trying a similar
bit. We're writing you a new show now, mate. This is
Let's do it. I might bring it back because I do a bit now about which does work most of the time, about how crisps are getting smaller. All our food is shrinking, and that's why I know the economy's up, because our food is shrinking but staying the same. And people go nuts for that observation because some people go super nuts. Like a couple of people in the audience all have noticed this, that like McCoy's crisp used to be 50 grams and it's now 47.5 grams. So it's
really
it's me kicking off, they're like, where the fuck are my 2.5 grams? And just going on about that for like,
it's like a drug, like you're a drug addict.
Yeah. And just being really pissed off. And this is like, and I say it's because of Brexit and stuff like that. And people go nuts for that observation because they just actually, some people have really invested their lives into this meal deal stuff. So actually, I think there is room to bring back all the meal deal stuff, especially in lockdown where everyone's in the supermarket.
Yeah. Yeah. Because whenever there's a chocolate bar that gets smaller, that kicks off in the papers. Like that goes... Because didn't cream eggs go smaller or something?
I think they did. And the Toblerone was like really thin for a while. And I think they had to reverse it. All the blocks were like tiny.
Yeah, and that's legendary to being massive, isn't it? Like one of those big Toblerones in the airport. Yeah. That's interesting. I've never been a meal deal person.
No.
But because it's like if you used to have packed lunches at school, but you've never really got over it. Isn't it?
I used to have packed lunch. I used to have a sandwich.
Crisps, drink.
Yeah. It is. It's bringing back the good old days. Were you not a packed lunch guy? Were you?
I was, actually.
Oh, you were.
But when I was a kid, I wasn't in. I didn't like food. That sounds weird, but I wasn't really.
Like food?
I don't know. I was quite, at primary school, I was quite self-conscious. I didn't like eating in front of people.
Yeah, I didn't like that either.
So I tended not to like eating because of that. I haven't thought about that for a long time. And also, as a kid, I was really fussy, so I couldn't have school dinners because there's no telling what it was going to be. And I was really fussy. Like, I'm the opposite now. I eat everything.
Yeah, I had the exact same thing. I just suddenly, at some point, realized, wait, I used to be really fussy. Now I will just eat anything. I don't know what changed. somewhere like around the age of 18 or something, I just started saying yes to everything when I would just say no to literally every new food before that.
Maybe it's just because when you have to start paying for it yourself. You have to start looking after yourself, otherwise you die.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe that changes it.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ken-Chang! Hashtag awooga to Ken-Chang. Good stuff. Lovely. Well, I hope you enjoyed that, listeners. I certainly enjoyed doing the interview. If you liked it or didn't like it, well, actually, don't tell us if you didn't like it. But any feedback, at Jokes with Mark on all social media. Be nice to hear from you. Joel, is there anything else we want to talk about? I am going to be doing my live Zoom gig, which I mentioned last week, on the 20th of December, Sunday, in the evening. If you would like to watch that, all you have to do is find me on social media and either tag me on Twitter or send me a direct message on Instagram or something like that. And just say you're interested, I'll stick you on the list, and then I'll send you the link when it comes to happen. It's a work in progress of my new show, so it'll be fun.
Lovely.
You going to watch, Joel?
Yes. I can't wait.
Ah, jolly good. Is there anything more from you, Joel?
Nothing more from me, Mark. Anything more from you, Mark?
Yes, there's more Ken Cheng on the Patreon, Joel?
Oh, there will be more Ken Cheng on the Patreon, Mark. Yeah.
Go check out Ken Cheng on the Patreon, /jokes with Mark. Anything else from you, Joel?
Nothing more from me, Mark. Anything more from you, Mark?
Nothing more from me, Joel. Hashtag Uyghur, everybody. Stay safe.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.